CMHC Ontario work in a broad manner to ensure that the mental health lens is embedded across sector at policy, health system, and program level using a social determinants of health framework. Our network of 28 local branches and communities across the province provide us a strong capacity to mobilize local partners. We manage several programs that support over 30,000 people yearly, such as our youth campus mental health program, our Talk Today program, which is basically a comprehensive mental health awareness initiative for amateur young athlete sports in Canada. We also have two amazing flagship cognitive behavior therapy principle programs, Bonsbach and Living Life to the Full, and both are accessible at either individual level or community level. Living Life to the Full, your host program here today, has successfully been adapted our program to the needs of different population. And we have reached with Living Life to the Full youth, caregivers, people living on the autism spectrum, older adults, seniors, post-secondary students in Black communities. We have also worked closely with several ethnocultural and language groups doing a cultural and language adaptation. And so far, our program is available in English, French, Cantonese, and Mandarin. And as of 2020, it will be available in Tamil. And we are always adding new language as we are able to with our program. So without any further delay, I'd like to introduce you to Dr. Petri, who is our host today and our speaker. Dr. Petri is a registered clinical psychologist, gerontologist, neuroscientist, and educator with over 15 years of professional experience. Dr. Petri completed her clinical internship at NCIHR-funded postdoctorate at the Center for Addiction and Mental Health. From 2004 to 2012, she led the Mood and Related Disorder Clinic and founded the Cognitive Behavior Therapy Service at Baycrest Health Sciences. Since 2012, at the Rotman Research Institute at Baycrest University of Toronto, she has studied the neural link between midlife depression and the development of dementia. She innovates treatments for depression and anxiety for older adults, including CBT, mindfulness, and exercise. Dr. Petri's research has been funded continuously since 2006 and has been published in peer-reviewed academic journals and book chapters. Dr. Petri has completed over 400 presentations, serve as mental health advisors for Bell's Let's Talk Initiative, Girls E-Mentorship, Women's Brain Health Initiative, the Jane Goodall Foundation, and has been cited by CBC, CTV, The Globe and Mail, The Wall Street Journal, and 20 other media outlets. In 2013, she was awarded the Women's of Baycrest Innovators in Research Award. And in 2016, the Government of Ontario Leading Woman Building Communities Award for the enormous impact of her work as a psychologist and gerontologist at Baycrest. She is also a proud alumni, a McGill alumni, and currently a vice president of the McGill Women Leadership and Philanthropy Committee. So without any further delay, I will share the microphone to Dr. Petri. Thank you for being with us again, Dr. Petri. And I think I should add also to this amazing bio, the amazing work you have done with us with Living Life to the Full. Dr. Petri has been with us for close to 7 years now, working as our key researcher for Living Life to the Full, and we are very grateful for her presence in our program. She has brought the evidence-based, an already evidence-based program into an even more evidence-based program by understanding a bit more the impact that we have with our programs to our stakeholders. So thank you again for being with us, Dr. Petri.
You're very welcome, Ellen. Thank you so much for that nice introduction. Welcome to everybody. It's I can't see everybody, but I know you're there. And we met last week. And so I'm just wondering how many of us were here last week. Is there some way to find that out, Ellen? Can we just quickly?
The little hands, maybe. do you see?
I actually can't. I can't see that. Can you just?
Oh, you can. Okay. Let's see here. So just put your hands up, or your little hands, if you were there last week. You were there. Okay. 1, 2, 3, 4. I see 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10. Eleven, okay, 12, 13. So it's
good. So it's a nice mix. And so yeah. I just want to say to those who were here last week, forgive me if some of this is kind of a bit of a review, but I think it's important to talk about the basic facts about mental health every time we meet. And so I'm going to just give you an overview of what we'll be talking about. So the talk is called Life Interrupted, but as Ellen said, it's really a conversation. So we want to talk about young people's mental health during this time, which is a difficult time for everyone, and especially for young people. And we'll talk about why that is and what can be done about it. So the first thing we're going to do is talk about the kind of emotions that young people and all of us are experiencing, but from kind of a youth perspective. And then we'll talk about when it's important for young people to seek help if they are struggling with mental health issues that were either pre-existing or something new during the pandemic. And then we'll talk about what's healthy. How can we help young people with their mental health? So let's start with kind of something that we all can relate to, which are the emotions that we're having now. So last week we had talked about there's, you know, a variety of emotions. Some people are feeling sad, angry, sense of loss, frustration, anxiety, and that sometimes you may feel you're experiencing all of those things. I think when it comes to children and young adults, one of the main things they're experiencing is what we call grief or anticipatory grief. So we don't usually relate children to having grief unless there's some major event happening on a day-to-day basis. But like adults, children do experience that sense of loss, that they're not in school, they're not seeing their friends, they're not seeing extended family. They can't move around. Obviously, we all need to exercise, but children need to kind of get their energy out, as do young adults, and that hasn't been possible. So anticipatory grief means that you feel like a sense of loss about something you haven't even experienced yet. And that is what young people are experiencing because they're missing milestones. So what milestones might they be missing? Graduations, birthdays, celebrations, vacations, internships, summer jobs, it could be anything. And so just like us as older adults, they are experiencing that sense of loss as well. So I think the first thing is to be able to acknowledge and name that young people are experiencing a lot, just like we are, but they're experiencing it differently. So I want to kind of set up why that is. And one of the main reasons is it takes 26 years for the human brain to fully develop. So that means that if you're anywhere under that age, your frontal lobes haven't completely developed. And so what that means is that the frontal lobes are what make us kind of human, make us who we think we are, our sense of self, our personality, our ability to plan, to understand consequences of behavior. So for example, young people sometimes seem like they feel like they're invincible or they're maybe reckless in their behavior because they don't understand consequences the same way that older adults do or people over their mid-20s do. And so what that means is that they lack metacognition a lot of the time. And what that means is that they don't have as good an ability to reflect on their own thought processes, their own situation, and think about the future in the same way that we do. So I'm going to take children first and then talk about young adults. So children, for sure, you know how we say that they're often in the moment. And the reason for that is they don't really have a good sense of time in that way of being able to think very far into the future or even that much about the past unless they're very salient memories. So what that means is for them and for young adults, we need to provide structure. So that's kind of tip number one. I'm kind of moving back and forth at the same time. And so what does that mean? The younger we are, the more structure we need. So if you've got young ones at home, or if you have grandchildren, I mean, this is very important. And it's important for teenagers as well, because they're still growing physically, they're still growing mentally, emotionally, and also cognitively. And so depending on the child or the young adult, it's important to sleep at the same time every day, wake up at the same time, you know, within reasonable limits, to have three meals a day, to be having healthy snacks, to be doing things in a scheduled way. Because we all need that, but children and young people need that even more because they're growing. And because when we are eating and sleeping at the same time, it's the body is sending the mind a signal that everything is okay. So it tends to calm the waters at home to be able to have some kind of structure. So that's really important. So again, it's because young people lack the ability to put that structure on their own experience. So is that clear to everyone? Yeah? Okay, great. So it's kind of hard because I know I can't see you and you're also muted. But anyway, so we'll carry on. And so the other part that they might be experiencing is a lot of anxiety. So how do we talk to young people about what's going on? So here, it's important to be aware that their sense of time depends on their age. So for very young people, we want to talk about what's happening now, what's happening this week, what's happening next week, that kind of thing. For older people, so young adults, we want to help them plan what they're going to do in the summer. We're going to help them plan what they're doing in the fall. So those things are very, very important, that we need to build a bit of a plan for people. So now I'm going to kind of stick more with young adults and talk a little bit more about mental health. And as I said last week, mental health is really a continuum which we're all on. So possibly on the left-hand side, you can say, it's, you know, optimal mental health. There's no such thing as perfect mental health. And on the right-hand side, what we have is somebody who's really struggling, who may be in inpatient treatment, maybe hospitalized, and everybody else is kind of in the middle, and we have different, levels of mental health at different times. So the Angus Reid study and poll that was just released states that 50% of Canadians say that their mental health has suffered. And it's the same for young adults and children. So about half of the people polled say that they're feeling worse now emotionally than they have, which makes sense because when we are in self-isolation, that has a lot of psychological impact on individuals, especially young people who may not kind of understand fully how long this is going to go on and why it's happening. And so it's important to be able to discuss this openly. So kind of point number one is to acknowledge and understand and name the emotions that we're experiencing and that the young people in our life are experiencing. Second point is to have structure. The third point is to be able to plan with the person that, let's say it's a young adult, the near future, and to build hope. So one of the things that we find is that young adults, over cohort, meaning generation after generation, the depression rates, the anxiety rates, and the suicide rates are actually climbing. So that is a fact. It's not just because of help seeking or because there's less stigma, both good things. So they are things are more stressful. And we can talk about maybe in the question answer period why that is. I'd love to hear your thoughts and start a conversation about that. But in the situation that we're in now, it's really important to be able to build hope in young people. What I hear a lot from young people, clients, patients, and others that I do webinars with, is that they feel like, as I said, this anticipatory grief, like their future has been taken from them. They're not as able as older adults to be able to think about what life will be like when, post-pandemic. I mean, we all don't know, so there's a lot of uncertainty, but it's hard when you really can't plan ahead to keep hope. So it's important to have something that we can offer young people. So, for example, tomorrow night, there's a virtual graduation of a daughter of a friend. And so we'll all be attending that from my home and joining in. And so part of building hope is having a plan. A second part is doing what you can do. So helping young people understand that if they are missing milestones like graduations or not celebrating the birthday the same way or not being able to be in school, what can they do? Can they meet virtually with their friends? Can they be on, email or, healthy social media to be able to connect with others? You know, they can pick up the phone. They can exchange, music over the internet or art or, lots of different things. And so it's important for people to kind of stay in touch, make plans, and to make some substitutions. Because what we're hearing more and more is that even post-pandemic, when everything reopens for good, it may reopen in a different way. So as I said last week, when things get back to normal is hard to say, and normal is a word we may want to retire for the time being, because we don't know what the society is really going to look like. So what we need to do is to adjust now, not later, because otherwise young people feel that their life is on hold. We all feel that way to a certain extent, and we feel that we have to adjust quite a bit. But for them, the adjustment is even greater. So I think it's really important to be aware that young adults have that experience. Now, when I was saying earlier that a lot of people feel that their mental health has suffered during this time, one of the main crises or situations young people find themselves in is that they feel very lonely. And so last week we talked about that exclusively, but I want to touch base again because many of you were not there. And I want to tell you that that's how everyone is feeling to some extent. So the number one concern that school children are having is that they feel lonely, that even though they're living within their families, they're missing their friends and they're missing their extended family and family friends and the ability to be spontaneous. One of the things that has been taken from everyone is they can't just kind of do what they want to do whenever they want to do it, going to the store, going to a movie, going outside. And so that kind of lack of spontaneity is, generally speaking, much harder for young people to deal with than older adults, because they're still exploring. They're still finding out what is enjoyable to them, building skills, building athletic skills, different things, and social skills. So it's important to understand that children and young adults can feel lonely. They do feel lonely. The age group 15 to 30 is as lonely as the elderly. So it's a group that is experiencing isolation anyway from an emotional perspective. And one of the reasons that is because being in quarantine or self-isolation makes us kind of feel psychologically on edge. It makes us feel that we're kind of separated from the tribe, as it were, and we may consciously be worrying about others that we can't see or meet, but we may also unconsciously just feel ill at ease, because it's not a natural way. Social beings, as we are humans, we need to be with kind of whoever we want to be with, our close-knit group. And when we can't be, it takes a toll on us, for children, for young adults, and for everybody. So I think one of the main take-home messages of today is that young adults need to be taken seriously, and children need to be taken seriously in terms of their mental health and their feelings and their emotions and kind of what they're going through. But they are not mini adults, right? They're not just small adults, because their brain is still developing. So how does that express itself when children and young adults are having mental health problems? So let's talk a little bit about that. So the first thing is all mental disorders are just two things. One is that people feel distressed. So they feel too sad all the time, too angry, too frustrated, too nervous, too anxious. And then the second part is that it impacts their functioning in daily life in some way. So it either affects their ability to concentrate and do their studies, it affects the way they relate to other people, it's affecting their, so therefore their relationships, it's impacting their ability to do hobbies or be involved in whatever they were doing, music, sports, things like that. So true that some of that has been suspended right now because of self-isolation, but nonetheless, we need to bring in substitutes. We need to be able to give children some amount of stimulation to be able to learn and grow and be and remain connected to others. Okay, so how do we know if it's time to seek help on the part of your child or on for to talk to a young adult about it? So I think that one of the main things is to just ask them. So part of it is you're observing their behavior, but the other part is to ask them how they feel. Again, we need to be more concrete because, again, remember I was talking about structure and youth. And so, it's easier if we are with very young children to even show them pictures like emojis, like, how are you feeling today? That kind of thing for very young kids. But it can help, even young adults. And then the second part of it is listening so that people will talk. So acknowledging what the individual is saying, even if it's hard for us to hear. Sometimes we don't want to, we don't want to see our loved ones in pain. And so we sometimes try and kind of shut that out. But it's important to open a dialogue and ask young, so I'll stick now with the young adults, how they're feeling and ask them to rate it from 0 to 10, from 0 to 100. So in terms of nervousness, if 0 is no nervousness and 100 is the most nervous you've ever felt, how have you been feeling today or this week or right now? And so helping young adults to monitor their mood and their mental health is a really good skill. So if there's a silver lining to having these kinds of stressors, it's to learn to manage stress in a more kind of concrete and organized way. So having people, having young adults write down their feelings, so journaling their feelings, talking to you about it, talking to a trusted mentor, possibly someone in your faith community, somebody who is, a friend, a sibling. So it's important to encourage that in young adults so they don't always know what to do. Because they have less life experience and they may be at a stage where they're kind of self-conscious. They don't realize as much as we do when we're older that, nobody's got it completely together. And so they may want to show that they're not experiencing any of the sort of anxiety and low mood and things that go along with this pandemic. So we need to inform and educate them. And one way we can do that is, okay, so we ask them how they're feeling, we acknowledge it, we problem solve with them, what can we do about this? And the other thing is to be open about how we feel in an appropriate way, not in a way that burdens young people, but in a way that models appropriate adaptive behavior. To say that, wow, today I'm feeling really kind of like, trapped in the house. I really wish that, I could go to the Y and work out. And I wish I could do this, I could do that. And it's okay. There's nothing wrong with, healthy complaining and, adaptive communication about what's really going on. So we too need to be modeling that it's that however we really actually feel. So if it's difficult to admit it, but at the same time, know that you're strong enough to deal with it. And that's what we're trying to impart to young people. Not that life doesn't have any stressors or the pandemic doesn't matter, but that it is difficult, but we can handle it. This is how we're going to handle it. We're going to be open. We're going to support each other. We're going to do problem solving. We're going to have substitute activities. we're going to do what we can do. We are not going to, so it's not all or nothing, I guess, is the main message. We need to adapt. We need to, try and find new habits, new ways of being healthy, and new ways of being socially connected with others while we are in this situation. And I'm going to just kind of end off, because I know that there's going to be all kinds of questions. And so I'm more sort of excited to hear from you than I am from myself. But let me just, I'm just getting my notes because I don't want to miss anything. So I want to talk about those tips just kind of one after the other after the other. So the first one is to talk to someone. So it's really important that young adults have confidants. So we know that compared to 30 years ago, twice as many people now say, so 40% of people, so including young adults, say that they have no confidant. They have no one to tell their troubles to. They don't have anyone where they can kind of let their guard down and talk about how they really feel. So right now, we really need to do that. We really need to have a confidant that we can be open with. And so young adults need to develop that if they don't have it. So this is actually an opportunity to be able to model that with young adults by being open ourselves, but also by helping them to develop those relationships, even if they have to do it over Zoom or, you know, the way that we are speaking now. We are all supporting each other. We're having a conversation. And that's really all it takes. So we don't want to impart the idea that we've got to save up our problems and we'll talk about them when this is over. Or this is a problem that's going to solve itself. Once this is over, everything will be fine. But we want to be as fine as we can be now, because that builds the muscle, the skill to thrive in difficult circumstances. So this is a challenge for young adults, but not the only challenge they're going to have. And so this is an opportunity in that way. It's, again, important to keep a regular schedule for everyone in the home and to check in on young adults if they're living on their own, and encourage them to have a schedule where they get up, shower, get ready for the day like they ordinarily would, and to make a plan for the day, to even to write it down if they have to, just to get going and get a proper schedule. And also for them to be able to, the next thing is to be able to relax and have fun. So just because now we're kind of opening, but not so much in Toronto right now. Reopening the society, we need to have a good time. We're here to enjoy life and not just completely stop everything during the pandemic. So it's important for young adults to have healthy ways to relax, whether they start a practice of meditation, yoga, running, walking, being in nature, music or playing music, reading, all those things are important. Watching a funny movie, having some entertainment. Those things are key, and that you can still do them during the pandemic. Sometimes we're going to have to push ourselves a little bit just because that maybe the thing that we, our number one choice of what we want to do, like maybe going out to a movie, is not something we can do. So what can you do? You can make popcorn and watch a movie at home, watch a movie while you're watching while you're with a friend on Zoom, those kinds of things. It's really important to keep your sleep, diet, and exercise organized as a young adult, because again, you're still developing. And then I think it's important for everyone to cut themselves some slack, to lower expectations. So it's important to impart to young adults that they're not alone, that you too are experiencing the stress. It's important. This is the time to share that. And it's also important to send the message that we don't need to pretend that nothing's wrong and that we can do everything to the level that we were doing it before. This is unlikely to happen, or that we're going to feel as good as we felt before. So just from the research I am seeing, it doesn't sound like, it isn't true that people are feeling as well, even in their mental health, as they did pre-pandemically. And so it's important to lower your expectations for now. And then we will build them up as the society re-enters. And it's, on the other hand, it's also important to practice gratitude, being grateful for what we do have, for what we can do, for living in a free, wealthy, relatively safe country where we have healthcare. And that's another message that we want to send to young adults, is they're not the best at help seeking anyway. It's important that if you know a young person who has a chronic condition like diabetes or whatever it may be, or a pre-existing mental health condition, they need to stay in touch with their healthcare providers. There's no reason to be afraid of the healthcare system. So, you know, you need to be in contact with your doctor when you need to be, and your mental health professionals. So make sure that you get that checkup from the neck up when you need it. Make sure that you continue on with your medical appointments, because staying on top of medical care is going to keep you well during this time. And then lastly, I just want to kind of wish everybody well and say, you know, let's all just do what we can where we are right now. And as I said last week, you know, my main wish would really just to be with all of you right now in the same room. And this is hard for me because that's what I enjoy. And but nonetheless, one of the things I've done to kind of adjust is to have a much longer question and answer period. Because it's harder to pay attention, I think, when something is on Zoom. It's more tiring than it is to see somebody give a talk in person. And I think that this makes up for the fact that we're not together in some ways, is that you get more of a chance to ask questions and we can feel like we're having a conversation. So I think I'm going to stop there for now, Hélène, and we can just start a conversation now.
Good. Lots of food for thought there. And what I got from this, which is what we think we teach in Living Life to the Full, is when we feel overwhelmed, when things are not in normal state, good enough is good enough. So let's remember that and don't put as much pressure on ourselves during these difficult times. So now the chat room is open. Send us your comments, your questions, whatever you want to say. We'll be open to hearing it, and I will be sharing that to Dr. Khatri as soon as it's coming in. So I already have one good question here. How can we be truly hopeful when things may be so different after we reopen because of this virus?
Right. And I think that it's important to be honest. And so I appreciate that question, because that it's a tough moment in the world and has never happened before. So usually when something happens that's a crisis, it's localized or it's contained. So other people can help, other countries can help. We can have international cooperation now too, but unfortunately everyone is experiencing this stressor, so that makes it harder. I think the thing that is going through my mind as I hear that is we need to have hope for its own sake. So being an optimist is not what I'm asking for. So being an optimist means that, you know, you're willing to get behind something because you think it's going to turn out well. But hope is, you know, getting behind something and doing something because you think it's worthwhile no matter how it turns out. So we don't know how it's going to turn out, but the very fact that there's so much uncertainty about that means that we need to build hope from within and by supporting each other. Because it's not true that we're not going to have any control once things open up again. So we need to, in a sense, be proactive and build the kind of world we want to be in. So in a sense, this is an opportunity because it's a reset. So even though it's busy, there are more quiet moments now just because a lot of our outside activities are somewhat constrained. So it's a time to think, to reflect on the world we live in, the country we live in, our communities, our relationships. And so, especially as we're talking about young people today, it's an important lesson in how much we need each other and how important it is going forward. This can be really a value shift. So if young people starting their lives now can learn that lesson, I think that it will be very, very helpful. And so I'm hopeful that way, because we're kind of focusing on young adults right now, is that, you know, they've got the rest of their lives to to, you know, rebuild from this and that kind of thing. But I think right now, we just kind of have to believe in ourselves.
Good. I've got lots of questions for you. Yes. It's coming up. It's coming in. So a comment here, an interesting comment. I feel like our society has done a better job of emphasizing physical health and healthy eating. Example, kids are taught in schools, sports, emphasizing physical health, and don't spend enough quality time educating children and youth about emotional health, healthy self-regulation, and building the emotional muscle.
Yeah, that's absolutely true. So I agree with that. I think that mental health is health, and we know that it's the number one problem in the world. According to the World Health Organization, we know that depression is actually accounting for more years of functioning lost than cancer, heart disease, and diabetes combined. And so this is kind of the final frontier. We've got a lot of chronic disorders under control, like hypertension, arthritis, and many others. And this is the thing that we now need to, we're kind of left with our emotional problems. It's not to say that there aren't concrete problems of poverty and other things, basic physical health needs in the world. But I think that it's really kind of the onus is on the developed world to focus on mental health, because we can, and then bring that out to the rest of the world.
There's another good one here. When people keep saying new normal, that is very discouraging. It's hard to be hopeful when people keep saying that the new normal will be so different. So not sure what you
share. As I said earlier, I think maybe just not maybe use that word. I think it's new. I don't know if it's normal. I think that when we say new normal, it kind of makes it sound like it's just going to get worse. So I think we can just say that it's just new, and we don't know what it's going to be. But the hopeful part is that we're going to make the future with our own two hands, in the sense that we'll work together and we'll develop what is going to happen. So, you know, please take heart. It's easy to be negative. I appreciate that. But I think that maybe people are just trying to be kind of polite about it. But I think it's just not use the word normal. It'll just be the future.
It will be a period of transition. Like we've been in several periods of transition, right, depending on how many gray hair we have.
That's true. But it's also worth noting that we haven't been through that much. So what I mean by that is that this is kind of a blip. So from the middle of the 20th century till now has been a very unusual, steady time for North America in terms of prosperity, in terms of more people having been in the middle class. Now that's changing too. And so that is actually not the usual for human history. There's been lots and lots of crises. There's been lots of upheaval. There's been lots of plagues, and people haven't had it a very predictable, I don't want to say easy, but comfortable life the way that we have been. So this is not something that humans can't handle. It's just going to be a change.
Absolutely. And someone here is saying, so this is a good opportunity to work on our emotional health, as you are saying. So it is. Every crisis brings some opportunities and lessons to learn. And this one definitely is time for emotional health skills, basically. So let me ask you some other questions here. In addition to anxiety and depression, I find my son is becoming very cynical. He believes society is deprioritizing the mental health of his generation over the physical health of the older generation. He is 17. He has lost graduation, prom, trips, summer jobs, etc. And he is now losing a first-year university on campus orientation, new friends. And this is happening at the same time golf course and restaurants are opening. How do we help them account for these mixed messages? Such a good question. Physical health is more important than mental health. The older generation is more important than the young one. How is the CMHA working with organization, institution, and agencies to advocate for the mental health of the young one? Wow, lots of things in there. So you want to take your share, Nazrin, and I'll
what
try.
What do you hear, Lynn, about what's the CMHA is doing?
Okay. Well, we have CMHA is a big organization at a national level, and every local CMHA do have youth mental health at heart. So it depends. Like every CMHA really work according to the needs of their communities. Some communities are more aging communities. Some are more younger communities. So at local levels, we certainly have a number of youth mental health programs. From CMHA Ontario, we have our mental health, our talk today that is focused on youth, actually in the amateur sports. We also have our campus mental health initiative, which is also focused on university students. Some of the Living Life to the Fools have been in the past, not currently. We haven't found funding for this yet, but this is one of our focus to really try to secure good multi-year funding for going in communities with Living Life to the Full and targeting a bit more our youth mental health. And we have our amazing Bonds Back program, which is available from 15 years old to 150 years old. If it's necessary. And all of our coaches in our Bonds Back program have a good training to help young people with mental health and low mood and anxiety and some level of depression as well. So overall, as an organization, the youth mental health is very important to us, I would say.
Yeah, I would agree. In terms of the part of the question about the cynicism, I think that that's also a part of adolescence too. It's a time where young people are finding out about injustices in society, about politics, about how the world really works, and so they're kind of coming into their own. So all cynicism isn't bad because it shows that a person is thinking, that they're able to have critical thinking about what is going on. So if some of those opinions are negative, it's actually, I mean, all right, but I think that the spirit of the question is that you want your son to be, you know, happier and just sort of well-adjusted and not to lose hope. But I think right now the important thing is to kind of just be supportive and to hear him out and to, as I said earlier, problem solve a little bit. So keep talking, even though it can sometimes be painful for you, probably, but and for him in the sense of saying these negative things, but then kind of saying, well, you mentioned, you know, missed graduations, missed first year university, all those things. And I know people personally who are going through that. And it's kind of trying to find some of the substitutes. So one of the things that happens before, as I said, your brain fully develops to the age of 26, is that your thinking is more black and white. So as you notice in teenagers, it's the best thing that ever happened to them, it's the worst thing that ever happened to them. You know, everything is a little bit more, kind of opposed, like opposites. And so it's important to bring them into the gray a little bit as they're growing up and saying, okay, so what's the first thing? The first thing that builds hope is that you're not alone. So the very fact that everyone is missing this means that you're not singled out for this loss. And when you all get together again, you will have those experiences. You will be at some point be able to celebrate the end of high school with your friends. You will be able to experience first year university. You will be able to do all of those things because you're missing them together. So it's not, so in that way, even though it's very difficult, his attitude will probably change kind of on its own naturally as he grows up a bit more, and also as he gets back into the swim of the activities that he's missing now.
Okay, thank you. There's another interesting comment here. I hear from a lot of parents who are concerned about what their teenagers are doing when they leave the house, particularly if they are following the rules of the family set in place for interacting with others. And I am not sure how to advise on that. So it looks like it's someone who is in an advising position here.
So I think it's important to understand that it's the law. This is one way to impart this information in a very concrete way to young people. This is not something your parents would prefer, or some kind of house rule or some kind of curfew. It's the law. So we don't want to break the law and do the kinds of things that are right now in place to keep us safe. So one thing is to explain it, you know, in a concrete way. And then the second part is why. Because I think the other thing that starts to happen in young adulthood much more is questioning. The questioning of laws and other things. But, I mean, it just, you know, any reasonable person is going to understand that it's important to do these things to stay safe and to keep other people safe. And it's really non-negotiable. And as I said earlier, again, because of the phase of brain development that they're in, they're able to do a lot of things because they're physically and cognitively mature in some ways, but they may not understand the consequences or may not think them out when one impulse kind of takes over and they think, well, I'm just going to, you know, see this, see this one friend or go to this one place, whatever it may be. So I think that that's the kind of thing that you can't, I understand that you can't completely control another person, but it's, you know, it's fairly well followed in Canada anyway, the rules. And so I think the society is also supporting you in this. We're all saying the same thing to children and young adults.
Okay, so we have another 8 minutes, about 3-4 questions to answer here. So we'll move on. How should young people deal with suicidal thoughts during this period?
So the important thing here is that anyone who's having any suicidal thoughts should seek help immediately. And so it's important for that person to talk to someone. It's important for them to maybe call the kids hotline, to call 211, which is a mental health number for everyone during the pandemic, to talk to a responsible adult, to talk to the doctor, to talk to their doctor, or to call a helpline. And it needs to be taken seriously. Suicidal thoughts are a part of the cognitive distortion that happens in depressions, because depression is made up of three areas of symptoms. The first is emotional. The second is physical, so changes in sleep, appetite, and energy. And the third is cognitive. So it's a cardinal symptom of depression to have anything from, you know, not being able to kind of think straight and pay attention and concentrate to actually having suicidal thoughts. Suicidal thoughts are not rare in depression, but they need to be assessed by a professional, and they need to be, we need to give that person treatment and support.
Nazrin, as a parent, would you go, in some of those training to, they ask us sometimes to ask the person who wants to commit suicide or have suicidal thoughts, if they have prepared the suicide. and, you know, check if there's a rope somewhere or maybe medications or whatever way they're thinking of preparing their suicide. Would you go to that extent if you were parents of a teenager who have suicidal thought, or you would prefer the parents to bring them to professional right away and have the professional address it in that manner?
If you can go to see a professional right away, I mean, that would be the thing to do. But it's okay to be open with your child and ask them those questions. But I think in a way, what would, but then you're not a mental health professional. So it's, you need to keep the child safe for sure. So you can ask those questions that help you keep them safe. But I think the first plan of action is let's talk to someone or let's call someone right now.
Okay. How should we interact with young adults from high school up to millennials if since they are still young? So I think it's coming maybe from someone who's maybe a bit older, as an older person. What's our... how should we interact with them, basically? That's my understanding of the question.
In terms of the pandemic or in terms of their...
The persons, maybe whoever sent these questions, maybe send some clarity on your questions, and I'll move on to another one and we'll come back to it. How about that? Because it's not clear here in the question. So this is a long one. I have found that some youth I'm working with have been struggling with loss of roles that they used to feel they had in their friends' groups or schools, or even on sport teams. For example, a person who valued their role as a school council leader, or an athlete, etc. Those roles serve to build their self-esteem and may have helped them feel valued, albeit from extrinsic sources. So they are struggling with how to find new ways to feel engaged and valued. Not everyone is engaged by a virtual connection with peer group. It's mostly a common. So what would you say on that?
Right. So here, I think that there it's important to acknowledge that there could be a loss of role, but it is temporary. So again, I think that young people find it even more difficult than older adults do, older than them, to understand that this will end. So even though it seems like it's been going on forever, it will end. They will take on those roles again. So one thing is to reframe it, that they haven't lost a role, it's merely suspended. So it's not to annoy them and to correct them and you know, just sort of split hairs. It's the truth, it's a fact. And so they need to be brought into that kind of mind frame, and that will come again. And in the meantime, even though they may not find virtual connections as meaningful, I certainly didn't when I started doing these webinars, for example, but just by the experience of doing them, I've learned to adapt. I feel much better about it now than, you know, 2 months ago, because I'm trying harder. I'm trying to get what I can out of it and trying to help people in this way. So part of it is reframing it, being factual about it, about the situation. The second part is doing what you can do where you are. And the third part is being grateful for what you do have, for the roles that you have, you know, that you're continuing to play, which are much more important, like the relational roles. And so I think that's kind of the thing to do. Oh, and sorry, and I just want to say one more time, also lower expectations. It's okay to tell people that, yeah, it's not the same, but then maybe we can expect it to be a little bit different.
Wonderful. I see some people already exiting here. The person brought the clarity to the question. So I will, we will, this is going to be our last questions of the session. How do we inspire the young adults when we see them isolated in cyberspace, hiding in their hoodies, so that they can see light at the end of the pandemic also? Isn't there an acronym for identifying suicidal behavior? So the idea of how older people can inspire young adults, I guess.
I think I'll answer that question. And I think one of the silver linings for young people is that they are going to enter in this world and take it over. I mean, they are the new generation. And so it's a responsibility, but it's also a sense of power and agency. So I think what's important is that they're next up. And so they'll be the ones who will form the society and develop the new future as we go ahead. So I think that's important for them to understand.
Okay, so we'll leave that with on these notes. Now, many have asked if the audio and all the resources we promised you and the notes of the session are posted somewhere. It is already posted on our CMHA Ontario website. I will, as of today, send you to everyone who participated last week an email to just give you all the links and everything. And this particular session will also be posted on the website, and Nazrin will send all the resources associated with the session as well. So I would like to thank you very kindly, Nazrin, for being here again today. All the participants, thank you for being here. It's always nice to feel that people are interested in chatting a bit about mental health and share concerns. So we will see you hopefully next week. Next week, can't remember, I think it's going to be older adult next week, right?
Yes.
Yeah, an older adult next week. And I wish you a good week. Take very good care of yourself. Go outside a bit. We're allowed to go outside and enjoy the sun. It's the sun is always bringing happiness in our hearts. So take as much as you can. Have a good week, everyone. Thank you.
You too.